Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. True Wealth is a weekly program sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is a full-service precious metals broker-dealer located in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is committed to honesty and integrity in every transaction. Now here's the host of True Wealth, Kevin Wolter.
Hello again and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Wolter, the host of True Wealth. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is located at 3201 North Division Street inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. And Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker dealer and depository service specializing in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, rare coins, scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds, as well as the sale of all forms of new jewelry, new diamonds. And we offer and specialize in investment guidance, wealth and capital preservation, things like that. Whatever stage or level you're at in the game, we are happy to help you and work with you. And as I mentioned previously, we do specialize in portfolio building. Basically, our background is very strong financially. We're far, far more than just a gold dealer. I realize there's a lot of gold dealers around, self-proclaimed. The business is kind of wacky. There's guys out there that come into this business with absolutely no capital whatsoever. They expect people to order stuff and then they wait around for it. And I mean, to be in this business and to not be well capitalized and to not have a pretty substantial inventory is foolish, to put it lightly. And these are the people that we've seen take some, you know, pretty serious advantage of people. We've seen the guy out in Coeur d'Alene not long ago take people down to the tune of about $2 million. For some odd reason, the local government did little. He did get a civil judgment against him, and that raised everybody's hopes, and the sheriff shut him down and closed shop and seized his assets. But they did that days after the judgment was issued, so he obviously had gutted everything. And despite the judge and sheriff's hope of seizing some significant assets, apparently that wasn't the case. Everybody is stifled there. You know, in this country, I spent years in banking, as most of you know, and one kind of perception I came out of that with is, outside of human morality, in other words, if people don't have a conscience, they can do a lot of financial damage. In our business, over time, over decades, we establish reputations in the industry where we can pick up the phone and make phone calls and have incredible amounts of money or gold moving our direction without anything to substantiate it. In other words, just based on our word. And, you know, luckily most criminals lack enough integrity to work themselves to that level. But in this case, like we were just discussing, you get a guy who sets up shop and, you know, he's taken $2 million of people's money. He lets his house go back to the bank. And he supposedly, one source told me that he had chartered a private jet to Miami. And then from there, rumor was he chartered to the Bahamas. He made a comment in one article that if he wanted to take advantage of everybody, he'd already be in the Bahamas. But apparently, you know, if you've taken $2 million of people's money, it's probably not too expensive to charter a private jet so you don't have to try to get it on a public airlines. Go to Miami and charter another private jet down to the Bahamas. Find one of those private security boxes that are just numbered that they offer and park it all there and stash it for a later day, I guess. That's about the only reasonable explanation to how somebody can lose $2 million, I suppose, and have little or nothing to show for it. That is, of course, unless you are the United States government, and then it is a standard business procedure. However, as an individual, that's not typical behavior. You know, as I mentioned before, I like how Obama comes out with his new budget this year, and it's to spend 4 trillion dollars. Okay, now this is nothing new. This is what we spend every year. Here's the problem. We generate 1.5 trillion a year in tax revenues. So where's the rest of the money coming from? Oh yes, and by the way, our new Fed chairman Yellen, of course this didn't come out of her mouth, but it's coming out of the Fed's mouth every now and then. Oh yes, they're going to taper quantitative easing. In other words, they're not going to be creating as much fiat currency sometime later this year, maybe, probably, kind of, sort of, but not really for sure. But they keep promising to taper quantitative easing or ease the QE. Now, our budget will have a deficit of $2.5 trillion. Where do you suppose that's coming from? It's pretty simple where it's coming from. It's coming from racking up the debt. And guess what, folks? That budget does not include interest expense and a bunch of other things. So guess what the interest expense is on, you know, by the end of the year, we're going to be at $21 trillion. And I can go back to a show I did years back, and I predicted we'd be at $21 trillion in deficit by the end of 2014. That's scary. We're increasing our deficit 25% a year, okay? We've got 17 trillion, and by the way, the budget does never include enough for these emergencies, for these welfare and warfare emergencies that you just can't predict for. But let's just say we've got 17 trillion in deficit. We're looking at doing, you know, we'll do 25% growth this year. And of course, that's the 4 trillion plus the interest expense, an easy 25%. And again, this is a 25% compounded. So anyway, at 25% per year growth in the deficit over the next 3 years, Obama will push this thing over $30 trillion. Now you got to remember, when he got into office, folks, we were at when he entered the political arena, we were around 5 trillion. They added 3.8 trillion before he was inaugurated. They blame that on Bush. Bush specifically stated he was against it, but he was doing it because Obama had been elected and he wanted it. Because Obama wanted it, Bush said, fine, he's going to do it for him to give him the start he wanted. And he said, he's a free market man, doesn't believe in it. Bottom line is, Obama began this process at $5 trillion. I assure you, folks, we will be well over $30 trillion when he leaves office, and more likely close to $33 to $35 trillion. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but I'm telling you, look at the percentages we've done. If we go from $5 trillion to $17 trillion just since he's got in, that is, what is that, 250% increase in 5 years? That's 50% a year if you divide it out. Compounded, it's right around a 25% per year increase. Now, here is the good news and the bad news, okay? The good news is if you have precious metals-based assets, there is a slew of experts, a ton of data and analysis that says 2014 is going to be a pretty seriously strong year in the metals. It's going to start out kind of slow, like we've seen, just sort of this strong, solid, confident chug forward as the metals are just, you know, gaining ground. We've got both metals, you know, gold and silver up, you know, 13-14% year to date, averaging over 6% a month, which, you know, I mean, that may not sound like a ton, but you know what? That's a pretty good run, folks. I mean, when you're looking at it, that's pretty respectable, and it's going to continue this way. So if you are hemming and hawing and standing by the sidelines, get yourself in. If you need to, you know, make some concessions, get some paperwork handled, get some stuff handled, get yourself in. If you've got, you know, some kind of an investment you need to roll out, get it rolled out. There's still time. You can pull that out. You're, I mean, basically, folks, with I'm a very mathematically chart-oriented guy, and this is a very, you know, we've talked over the last year, it was kind of a dark bottom, and we just took a beating, and it, you know, you can look at it a number of different ways. There was mass manipulation, yes, but let's be realistic. The market had run so solidly for so many years that it became institutionally pumped up and propped up, okay? So if you look back at what metals were, you know, prior to 9/11, and our total deficit at the time was about a fifth of what it is now. It was around 3 trillion. We're at 17, so it's gone up about fivefold. And in the same period of time, metals have gone up about what? Fivefold. So now what you're looking at is you're looking at metals that were bottomed out and then and bottomed out now. And you've got an equal growth rate that parallels true inflation. That's what the metals do. Worst case scenario. Okay. So we've got gold bottomed out at 1350, you know, say 1300, whatever. And it, you know, that's a pretty substantial number. I do remember clearly, you know, 6, 7, 5 years ago, sitting there going, wow, what would $1,000 gold look like? I remember people asking me, when gold hits $1,000 an ounce, who in the world's going to be buying it? And folks, I'll tell you, it's just the opposite of that. What's crazy is people are like, well, I can see why people are buying it now at $300 an ounce, and actually they weren't. But who in the world would want it at $1,000 an ounce? Well, it's a supply and demand issue. First of all, it's all inflation related. The thing that we just don't get, and it doesn't ring true in our heads. I mean, this week I was talking to a gentleman, and he's like, how in the world, if the dollar, he says, if the dollar collapses, how am I going to turn this back into cash to spend? And it's this directly contrasting question that makes no sense, but we don't realize it, okay? If the dollar collapses, why in the world do you want cash, okay? We need to look and realize that gold and silver are money. They are money. I spent some time today looking through the Bible. Just go on to one of these online websites, biblical websites, and search like the word gold or the word silver. You know, 400 accounts of gold, 400 accounts of silver is roughly how many times it's mentioned in the Bible. Gold and silver are mentioned roughly 801 times, depending on the version you're looking at. First of all, that's pretty serious. And then you go through and you look through like, you know, when they're given the description on how to build the temple, and they're like saying, you know, make the chair out of solid gold, and it's 2 cubits wide and 3 cubits long and 5 cubits tall, and, you know, the walls are solid gold, the lampstands are solid gold, the floors are solid gold. And if you know gold like I know gold, you're like, where in the world are you getting all this? Well, just based on that, going off of today's standards, I've mentioned this, the gold that went into the great temple of Solomon, by today's standards, would be worth well over $1 trillion. And then, of course, I think it was Hezekiah that, you know, had to show off all the riches of the temple to the Babylonians, who eventually, you know, came back to take it all. And I, you know, if you've been to Israel, it's pretty phenomenal to sit there and imagine, I mean, the size of these troops. I mean, you know, they'd bring in 500, 600,000 men on foot from, you know, 1,000 miles away. And it would take them a year and a half or 2 years to get there. And rumor would come. People would say this massive troop is assembling. I mean, can you even fathom that? That is absolutely mind-boggling. But eventually that all went away. And, you know, the point is, as you go through the Bible and you look at the power of precious metals, I mean, it's obviously endorsed, ordained, and authorized by God from the very get-go. And you have to remember that gold and silver remained money until essentially the Bretton Woods Act of 1946 throughout all history. Now, it's interesting that every great empire has created fiat currency. I mean, one after the next until they crash. And if you notice, even in the story of Joseph in the Bible, when it talks about the money went bad. And it says, you know, their money was bad. Their money went bad. And then you think about it and you say, well, what do you mean the money went bad? Was it fiat currency? We don't know. But it does never say gold or silver wasn't acceptable. It says the money went bad, but then it says that Joseph traded for horses and land and all these other things that are biblically endorsed and authorized and attributed as true wealth, but it said the money was bad. And so these people couldn't buy food with money, with the money they had. And I suspect it was fiat currency because, I mean, it would make perfect sense. The Pharaoh was the deity of the earth, of Egypt, and you know, those are the guys that take all the gold and issue certificates of worthlessness eventually. And if you think about it, the only things attributed as true wealth in the Bible are gold and silver, livestock, real estate, and human life. Okay, so you got precious metals, those always remain. Real estate, you know, which you can grow, you know, crops on and things like that. You got livestock, which is food, and then human life. Well, Joseph was accepting, he was accepting livestock. He was accepting, you know, food, grains. He was accepting real estate. Why wouldn't he accept gold and silver? I mean, he was a godly biblical man and had always been there. It's of great value. I suspect that that scripture is talking about fiat currency, and it never was addressed properly there. You know, because it wasn't relevant or whatever. That's very interesting. I think it's an interesting way to look at it. Now you look back and it's okay, well, these people that had assets were able to get food. It tells us that. And of course it talks about human life. Well, there's no doubt in our mind that the Pharaoh had plenty of control over human life. That's how Joseph got there in the first place as a slave. So the Pharaoh had no problem, you know, fitting his kingdom with slaves. The story of Joseph, too, as a broad tangent, I was talking to a friend about that today. That is a powerful, powerful story. It's a story of attitude. It's a story of tenacity. It's a story of what our spirit is supposed to look like and what it's supposed to be like. And we have come to this time where we are so self-absorbed and self-centered. And, you know, there's no jobs out there, okay? I know a gal who met a diamond broker on a plane, a large diamond dealer. She knew nothing about diamonds. She needed a job. She asked him, can I sell diamonds for you? He says, well, I don't know, you know, whatever. So she actually began to go to jewelry stores and just ask them, do you need any diamonds? And she got a couple jewelers to try her out to say, well, yeah, right now we have a customer that needs a, you know, say 1.5 carat, you know, E, VVS1, whatever. And so she called the guy and get a diamond shipped into her. First, she had to pay for him up front because he didn't know her. And then she'd go and turn it and maybe make, you know, 10 or 20% and boom. And pretty soon she grew. She made work. I've seen all kinds of people make work. A good friend of mine created a website. He took his knowledge about manufactured housing, and then he started to, you know, in 3 years he was literally the U.S. renowned expert and consumer advocate for manufactured housing industry, and then he moved into RVs and so on, and he's done incredibly well for himself, but he created a position for himself. He was willing to work, and the first literature he sent out was a 32-page flyer that he printed up on his own printer. And, you know, the bottom line is, you look at what Joseph did. You know, when you think you got it tough, okay, you got a guy who got sold by his brothers, well, thrown into a ditch to die by his brothers, picked up, sold into slavery. You know, stewardship is what this is really about. This is what we were talking about. You got a guy who comes in the worst scenario, and he's such a good steward, he's so trustworthy and so reliable that he works his way all the way up until he actually gets accused of raping Potiphar's wife. I mean, of raping one of the highest ranking officials' wives. So then he goes all the way to the bottom and he ends up in prison. And then what happens is he gets out, you know, with God's grace and blessings and everything else, which I think is available for all of us if we live that way. He gets out, and then what's he do? He gets in control, basically, of the entire kingdom of Egypt. He started out as an Israelite slave. He works his way to the top. Why? Strictly because of his attitude of stewardship. He worked as unto the Lord. And we are called to be good stewards with what God has given us physically and given us responsibility over. We are to be wise and thrifty with our own money and that of others. We will be held accountable for what we've done with what God has given us, not only in the life to come, but in this life here and now. And by what he's given us, you know, I've discussed the scripture over and over again. He who is faithful with little will be given much. To him who much is given, much is required. God expects stewardship. You know, gold and silver is money. We have other stuff we call money. The same principles apply. When it comes to our money, we want to be wise stewards. The scripture tells us that we need to prepare and protect our family members. I'll get to that here in a minute. But the bottom line is, we have a stewardship responsibility. We have got to be good with what we do. When people say, oh, I'm just not a money guy. Well, you know what? You never will be either. How many times have you ever seen someone that, I'm just not a numbers person, ever really hit big success? Now, I'm not saying that we're the name it, claim it, you know, and jam for fame and go for riches and wealth. Not at all. And the Bible is very clear that the love of money is the root of all evil. And that's simply because we're putting that item above God. And the actual word, there's one word for the entire phrase, the love of money, and it's like philageria, which means an obsession with money, an absolute craze for it, the worship of it. We're not supposed to be like that, but at the same time, we're called to be good stewards with what we've been given. The parable of talents is one of my favorite parables. It makes it very clear. I like it because it applies to so many things, and yet they use the word talent. So it talks about what you've been given as a person, and yet a talent was a form of money, and it's just got so many mixed meanings. I love it. In the parable, a talent starts out, and it says, for the kingdom of heaven is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. Okay, the word in Greek is doulos. And basically what the word means, it's somebody who's dedicated to someone else with no concern for their own self-interest. That is a steward. That's what we're talking about here. And then it goes on and it talks, you know, he gave to each according to his ability. So he gave one to the one and five to the other and 10 to the other. And, you know, we can't look around at one another and compare, folks. You can't say, look at her, man. She's absolutely beautiful. She's got it all together. She's smart. You know, and look at me. I was born pudgy, one leg shorter than the other. My eyes point opposite directions. I'm deaf in one ear and I can't hear out of the other. And my hair won't comb right. And, you know, I mean, it's irrelevant. God knows how you were made. He placed your spirit within your body. I believe there's definitely a genetic lottery, but the thing you got to understand is God chooses where to place your soul or your spirit. This is something the Bible touches very little on, is where that spirit comes from, where it's been, how he chooses where to put it. You could have just as easily been placed in a Chinese or African American body or whatever. Souls and spirits don't have color or nationalities. We don't know all about that. But we do know that God knows each and every one of us down to the numbers of hair on our head. So he gives us what we can handle. He knows what we're capable of. And trust me, folks, we are accountable for what we do with that. We're also accountable for how much faith, you know, the level of trust we put it in. You know, do we go out and try to manhandle the world and never trust in him and try to take everything into our own hands and carry a bunch of grudges and bitterness around and try to hurt people? Or do we steal, you know, because it's just not enough? Do we get greedy and say, well, he shouldn't have that, I need that? You know, coveting your neighbor's stuff, and then thou shalt not steal. There's a lot of different things out there. But The parable of talents basically has two examples. It's got the man who got one talent, and he buried it in the ground, and he projected all of his dysfunction on the master. And okay, God made him. God knew what he was like. He knew what his weaknesses were. He gave him just enough that he could handle. He knew he might blow it, I guess, but look at this. He knew this guy had the potential to do it right, but he didn't. And he used the one as a big example. But what's scary about the one is he called him, "You wicked and lazy servant." Okay? It's not respectable to be a greedy, lazy hoarder. When we sit around and grumble and mumble and get a sense of entitlement and won't go out and do things, he calls us lazy. And he says it's wicked. The men who went out and tried, who did something, he glorified, he blessed, he actually exemplified them to us today. God expects us to follow him. He says, if you love me, you will obey my commandments. Be still and wait patient for the Lord. But there's a lot of commandments of action. We are called to action. And so when we kick back in this world and we go, things are kind of rough out there, but, you know, the real peace that I have is it's all in the hands of the Lord. And he's got the final say at the end. Yeah, he's God, no doubt. But you know what, folks, we got a lot of responsibility. And I'll tell you what, if you ever fall into that frame of thinking, do some serious thinking and understanding and studying of the founding fathers of this nation. This is the greatest nation on earth in the history of the world. I mean, Israel had their blessings and were created because of him. We were created for him. And there was a lot of bloodshed, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of hard work, energy, and efforts went into that. And if those guys wouldn't have done what they did, we wouldn't be here today. Not only that, if, you know, they were the byproduct of Christ coming and dying on a cross. But I'm telling you what, folks, if the American founding fathers hadn't done what they did today, this world would be much, much darker. It would very well, the superpower could very well be one of the darkest forces on earth. And I'm telling you, they did the right thing, and you need to do the right thing. You need to go out and do and act. You've got the parable of talents in your everyday life. You've got responsibility for stewardship. The parable of talents transitions from him casting out the worthless slave into outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, to the Son of Man coming in his glory, sitting on his throne with all the angels with him, and all the nations before him, separating the sheep from the goats, putting the sheep on his right and the goats on his left, thanking the sheep for providing food, drink, hospitality to strangers, clothing, visiting prisoners, providing medicine and support to those in sickness and illness, and then stating to those on his left what they did not provide for his needs and casting them into the fire which is prepared for the devil and his angels. Proverbs 27:12 says, "A prudent person foresees the danger ahead and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences." Danger looms ahead for this nation because we're not good stewards at all financially. We've turned our back on God, and his judgment will come. You as a believer have his wisdom in his Bible, and you're hearing it today. You need to secure your wealth in biblically attributed assets in True Wealth, which is precious metals based assets. Give Coins Plus a call at 444-0044 in Spokane and let us talk to you how we can help you do that. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care, God bless, and have a fantastic week. We'll be right back in the next half hour. Thanks again.